Very simple this week. Spin Bros drew. Momentum. Scripting. Handicap. Foot Economist. Cheating. Market Panic. Team of the Group Stage. Me, Ronaldinho. I'm your host, Ben, and you're listening to the Foot Weekly Podcast. Hello and welcome to week 11 of the Foot Weekly Podcast. As you just heard, I have Drew from Spin Bros with me today. A pleasure. I think it's your debut on the podcast, so thanks very much for coming on.
Yeah, much appreciated, dude. Definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Just a quick note before we get into our discussion. I wanted to preempt a few points people have made before, especially this will go out to some of our newer listeners. Welcome, by the way. I'm going to be arguing that I don't believe in momentum scripting and handicap online, but it should be noted that, you know, this isn't anything to do with us being part of the EA Game Changer program. In fact, if I couldn't express my opinion on a subject, on FIFA, on foot, then we wouldn't be part of the program. And it's also a belief that I've held for many years, and I suppose it's only been substantiated or confirmed by my interaction with EA and with the gameplay producers, etc. Unfortunately, I can't relay all the things I've learned on the podcast, just the nature of non-disclosure agreements. But, you know, I won't shy away from criticizing EA, as many of you will know. Yes, I've been helping out with the Foot Champs podcast, but I'll always be critical of FIFA esports, as I have done and will continue to do so. But I think, Drew, you're going to provide a nice counterpoint. What are your thoughts on momentum, scripting, and handicap?
Yeah, so honestly, the way I look at it is I do kind of think we all sort of have different names for the same thing as it kind of happens from a game-to-game basis. So I don't feel like necessarily, like, as soon as you match up with someone, I don't really think that, like, Team A or Team B is necessarily, you know, scripted or, like, predetermined to win. But there's just so many things that seem to consistently happen. Like, you score a goal. You do all this work, you pass it around, you make a long shot, or you pass around the box, you get a tap in, something like that. And then it just seems like the second you do, it's like the team just, dude, they just go to sleep or something, which, you know, I understand maybe they're trying to emulate real life a little bit with that, which I get. But, you know, for a competitive game, especially like a FUT Champs type game, I just think it's crazy that you have to overcome that kind of thing, you know, on a game in and game out kind of basis. So, and that's just one example. But
do you think, because my argument for this, right, it's something that a few other people I think will also make the point on this. When people say that, I often think, though, is that just a personal kind of, I don't know, sudden loss of concentration because you're like three goals up? Is it because the other player obviously has all that kind of actual momentum, which you see in real football matches? The mental resolve of a team slips as they go 3-0 up or whatever, and that allows the opposition to get back into the game. They score a goal, and that kind of galvanizes the like belief in the opposition team who've scored the goal to try and get themselves back into the game, whereas the other team maybe still haven't quite switched on because it's 3-1, and then it gets to 3-2, and by that point the team that's winning is now very nervous, and the team that's sort of on the ascendancy is obviously getting more and more momentum behind their sort of play. Do you not think that is maybe just purely the kind of mental battle that is any kind of competitive game?
See, I think as just FIFA players as a whole, I think we kind of take it too far sort of in both directions. Like sometimes we'll blame it, you know, all on one thing, like, oh my God, the game wants me to lose. And in another situation, we'll be like, oh my God, get good. Basically, yeah. Is kind of what it comes down to. But no, I agree in that. I definitely think it's like partially a mental thing. But just from experience with like live streaming a lot of FUT Champs games and just playing division games and stuff like that, if you read the chat, almost every time you score a goal, like someone has a solution or like a suggestion for how to prevent that instant kickoff goal. And I think while sometimes it is mental concentration, even when I'm streaming, I'm like, all right, guys, I just scored. I'm ready. Like, I'm expecting something to happen. Like, I don't want to shut down. I know my team's going to be maybe not playing how I want them to play right now. And so sometimes I'll try, like, offside trap or, you know, park the bus, something like that. But to me, what I feel like is sometimes that when someone just runs that, like, kind of down the middle of the pitch and sort of diagonal when they get up towards, like, the final third, it just seems like the back defenders, either you can't switch to who you want, or it's just like they kind of don't close down like they normally would in other situations. Or at least that's kind of what I've found, I think, from my experience. But like I said, I think sometimes we take it kind of to extremes, like to one side or the other, you know what I mean? So
yeah, I totally know what you mean about that. And it's interesting in terms of the kickoff thing is something that's been mentioned a lot this year as a real problem. The noises I've heard is that actually there's a belief that it is maybe slightly psychosomatic. I'm not going to reveal too much about that, but I have heard rumors on this. But, you know, I think one of the things to dig into that a bit more is are we kind of building up this kind of idea that there's some kind of scripting and momentum and all this kind of stuff, when actually we just need to take EA to account more for their coding of the game, in that it's sloppy. Like, maybe kickoff is bad because actually defenders' positioning is like really poor. Because I always find that if people do score kickoff goals and really direct ones, they always go the same channel through your team. And maybe they move slightly because when you try and cover that channel, they'll move out of the way. But I feel like maybe that is more the problem, not necessarily the you know, the scripting momentum and handicap.
Right. No, I feel you on that totally. And I mean, I will say, I do think there's like some other examples of that that go on. Like, I just feel like there's situations where, let's say it's maybe, I don't know, a nil-nil game. And then, you know, you've been playing defense decently the whole game. It just seems like eventually at a certain point, like one team or the other is just going to take that shot that like is kind of like well-marked. You know, there might even be two defenders and it's just going to go between their legs or like parry off the keeper. And, you know, I think we do kind of tend to blame too much stuff on EA, scripting, et cetera, et cetera. Because, I mean, they do have kind of a hard job. Like, they're trying to imitate real, you know, chances like that go in real life. People make shots between the legs. People make shots off rebounds. It's just, I don't know. Sometimes the situations, to me, like the way it falls in a game just seems like almost like too convenient. But, you know, EA have a tough job. I mean, they have to make it realistic. But it's like just certain times, to me, it just seems kind of like
too much.
Out of place, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, because one of these, we discussed this a few weeks ago on the podcast, but the whole thing with like RNG is obviously one of the things people blame. Well, they blame this idea that there's scripting going on, but actually I think in a lot of cases, for me, it is this idea that in some way the game has to be random, because football is random, like, to an extent. And otherwise we'd feel very weird playing the game, because it wouldn't feel like football.
Right.
And so you have to kind of have that balance, because everyone wants to score these like amazing long shots, but at the same time they don't want to concede like bullshit goals from outside the box. So it's kind of like this constant balancing act between the two, right? Which how can EA like ever resolve that? I think one of the things that people go back to in terms of kind of directing their beliefs in these things is that EA are in some way out to get the community. I can see why there's a number of people who believe this after the pretty terrible chem glitch, basically informs weren't being boosted by chemistry, which meant that a lot of their kind of original not inform items played better than their informs, which was ridiculous. And I remember at the time thinking something wasn't right. Like, I was playing with the Janik inform, which was a central card, and it was so much worse than the winger, and it was bizarre. And then this guy Righteous Onyx worked it all out. I got in contact with him to sort of ask him what he thought about this year's game and whether there were any issues in the this year, and he said that there definitely weren't. But interestingly enough, we actually had today something come out from a German YouTuber claiming that there was some trait gate, essentially some problem with traits in FIFA this year. I don't know whether you want to elaborate a bit more about that. I know you were talking about it on your stream.
Yeah, sure. So I didn't really get too much more information. We were just going over it with the chat and looking at that that image, which is kind of interesting. You know, I like I said, I don't know too many more details regarding the specialties and all that, but I just find it, I find that stuff like that sort of lends more credibility to the argument that there's, you know, underlying things going on out of, you know, out of the player's control. Because even though that's not really something hidden, you know, they weren't really trying to hide it, but like, think about how many other potential just unnoticed or, you know, invisible things that we don't really get to see, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think I mean, one of the things that I'd point out about this first of all is that the image, I mean, it may just be a mistranslation, the guy's German, it says offline traits and online traits, but actually what he's talking about, and this is a common confusion amongst FIFA players, I think, is specialities, not traits. Traits actually affect the player's ability to, say, score finesse shots, finesse shot trait, things like that, or the way they take on finesse shot traits, finesse shots, whereas specialities are just when a player has 88 agility, for example, they then have acrobat trait, for example. So what he's kind of showing here is that the specialities when you're offline and when you're online are different. Obviously, I spoke to Reichsonics and Czechs, and he thinks that there isn't a problem with chemistry in the game for informs. And what this is two inform cards, or an SBC and an inform card. Actually, I think they're both league SBC cards that he's comparing. So I think that although this looks problematic, actually all it is a visual representation of the ability a player has. And actually, like, they've had a number of visual glitch issues within this kind of, I guess, in-game stats area of the game, which they've fixed across this FIFA. So I think that's probably why you're seeing this kind of discrepancy.
Yeah, no doubt. So who knows if it actually affects it in-game? I'm not really sure. But like I was saying, you know, as more stuff like that comes up, I just feel like that kind of lends more credibility to people who are claiming, you know, that there are other things that we just don't know about. Like, who knows what's going to be discovered 2 weeks from now, you know? Like, we don't know what someone's going to notice. And I do think it's pretty cool that, you know, the community as a whole is so passionate and look for so many details and that kind of thing. You know, that's really admirable for the community. But I don't think we're out of line, though, for asking for stuff to not be broken, you know?
I think that's a fair
request of the community, for sure.
I think we have to highlight these things because otherwise they don't change. And as we were saying earlier, it's an unenviable task because you've got hundreds of thousands of people looking through all these things when I don't know how many employees they have. They should probably have more considering their turnover. But that it's always going to be that these things are found by the community because they are so many hours of their time go into looking through the game. So in connection with these issues in terms of people finding kind of ways that EA might manipulate the game to encourage people to, I guess, ultimately spend more money. We've got two kind of connected things which came out. This idea of dynamic difficulty, which a Reddit post found this PDF, and it basically goes into some research that was being done. I mean, do you want to explain a bit more, actually? Because I believe you were saying you've read it yourself, so I don't
want to... Yeah, definitely. So I haven't read the whole paper, like, end to end, but this was something else we were just examining on stream because our chat brought it up. And so basically kind of what it came down to is it's got some EA employees on the top of this paper, and they're just they're going through this whole thesis, and they got an abstract and this whole scientific, basically, formula to know how to keep players more engaged with the game. So it doesn't specifically say FIFA, you know, in the paper, but it does say that they've been using it on, like, certain mobile games, and it talks about applications like that. But essentially, the figureheads, if you want to call them that, have developed a way to basically keep people more engaged for a longer period of time with the game, which, if you think about it, like, on the surface, that sounds like a pretty good thing. Because for FIFA, you know, we want, as streamers, as podcast creators, as YouTube creators, you know, we want FIFA to do well. So, myself included. Obviously, I want FIFA to do well, but if it's being done at the expense of the difficulty being changed, like, while you're playing a game online, say of weekend league. So let's say a consistent, you know, elite 2 player comes up against a consistent silver 1 player or something like that. You know, I don't think they should be making it easier for the silver player to beat an elite player. And, you know, that's been a lot of people's arguments in FIFA for a long time. Like, you'll see pro players still put bronze players on the bench. So, you know, whether it's, like, set in stone or not, I think a large portion of people that play do feel that essentially either lower-rated teams or, like, putting bronze players on the bench does affect how much, quote-unquote, help the other team gets. And basically what I'm getting to on that is I feel like, just from my experience, like, I think I'm not – I mean, I haven't hit elite on FUTchamp, so I think I'm between average and above-average player. I'm definitely not elite, top tier.
I should point out that this is, like, definite misconception because – sure. You're considerably above average as a FIFA player. A lot of people, I was chatting to a guy at this capture event, and basically, if you're gold 1 player or above, you're in, like, the top, like, I think 4-8% of FIFA players or something.
Really?
Yeah. So something to take home with you, you know, enjoy.
Hey, that's good.
you should. I think it's worth pointing out because a few people will be listening and wondering themselves. But and then there's this very kind of tight segment of players at the top. Is it any wonder that these kind of minor issues are being the result deciding things within games that I'm playing?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. It really comes down to when you get up to that, like, elite 1, elite 2, gold 1, all that, you know, it comes down to the super minor details. And obviously it gets accentuated way more from FUTchamps because there's a lot, you know, a lot on the line. But what I was going to say regarding that, and that's good to know, I didn't realize,
sorry,
you know,
just
I didn't know high gold was that Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. So I was going to say, though, I feel like when it comes down to the quote unquote scripting, handicap, momentum, all that, you know, if they really are trying to keep lesser skilled players engaged, you know, if that paper that we're talking about does hold true for FIFA, it would really make sense that kind of the average to above average player, you know, is being forced to try harder against the lower tier players to keep the lower tier players more engaged. So, you know, like I was saying before, I do kind of see both sides of it, but I just think from my perspective, I feel like there are games where I know I give it away and I know it's my fault, but then there are those games where I'm just like, dude, I can't score. The goalie has 50 saves. Like, I would make this chance in another game. Like, what am I doing wrong? Yeah, how is this team, like, run? Like, how is, you know, a slow center back running down my crazy fast striker? And, you know, I get that center backs chase down Ronaldo in real life. You know, he gets caught. But there's just certain situational things where I feel like it's just a little questionable, not going to lie. A little questionable.
Yeah, and going back to this paper as well, the one thing that I would say, which I spotted, which I feel maybe negates its possible impacts, and EA, as we know, you know, they churn out these games once every year, which is a lot for a game cycle, and seemingly don't have the time to fix many of the problems in the game. I'd question whether they're going to implement something which actually, within this document, it says we have observed up to a 9% improvement in player engagement, but a neutral impact in monetization. Which suggests to me that if they're not going to make any money by implementing this, then are they actually going to do it?
Yeah, time and that's true. Yeah. And from that point, I wonder if it's neutral in that they mean it won't make them more money, or if they mean it won't lose them money. So, for example, the top tier players will keep spending money on packs because it's not affecting their monetization.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I can see that, you know, from both perspectives, and I totally, you know, respect the fact EA is a business. I know they want to make profit and all that, you know, I'm totally fine with all that. It's just for the amount of time, the amount of money, the amount of like free publicity streamers and YouTubers give the game. You know, like we were saying, I think it is important to accentuate those details and point out, you know, the flaws when we see stuff like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I should also say that, you know, I said this last week, and obviously the regular listeners to the podcast will know because they will have listened to this podcast, but I spoke to EA's gameplay producers, and they outright denied that there was momentum or scripting or anything like that in the game. And I suppose, I think one of the things that has really brought this debate back to the fore is the squad battles, because people have been complaining a lot about the way that the computer seems to just suddenly gain the ability to kind of score free goals. Is this something you've experienced? Do you play much squad battles?
I've mostly played squad battles kind of as like a side thing. It's something I'd like to do more because I've kind of taken a break from champs for just a lot of the reasons that we've been talking about. But I have noticed that when I play it like on a little bit higher level, like world class or legendary, it usually seems like it's pretty tight. And then at some point they just kind of, you have to overcome when they break out a little bit, you know? So back to what we were saying before, like I agree some of it's definitely mental, but at the same time, it's like you'll see just some random player score like an off balance shot kind of like out of nowhere, even though you've been defending pretty well for most of the game. And I think that's consistent with I've seen a lot of tweets of just like funny videos of stuff happening where it shouldn't happen, or you know, just people in our stream chat that definitely seem to think something you know, goes a little off in squad battles sometimes.
And again, this kind of comes back to my point that like these gameplay producers said that, and like I said last week as well, I spoke to them off mic, and my belief from speaking to them, and also, you know, that's been my belief for a long time, that this stuff isn't some kind of EA scheme. And I think because I know kind of a bit about how they work, they're on a tight deadline, there's a lot of sloppy issues within the game. I mean, giving Battlefront a go, and I had to stop playing it because there are so many problems with the game. So I mean, I enjoyed it when it was working, but I felt that actually there were plenty of things that they'd sort of not managed to get sorted. So you kind of talk about that, and then you think about this kind of grandiose idea that there's all this kind of aspect that EA have implemented. And I just think most of it is going to be down to RNG, to sort of more sloppy coding that's in the game. And also, you know, to the fact that, and I'm guilty of this on occasion as well, people always look for reasons why they aren't performing. And they don't want it to be their own ability. But, you know, when you've been sort of we're a similar level, so sort of a good but not exceptional player, and you're playing really top players a lot of the time, which you are in Foot Champs, and with ridiculous teams, you don't want to believe that you're never going to get to that level. But having played Foot Champs for over a year, like, I don't think I'm going to be, I just don't have the concentration, which is another reason why I don't blame EA for many of my problems, because frankly, I think a lot of the time I'm just not focused. And I think that can be, if someone goes through all 40 games or have many Foot Champs games, really focused for multiple weeks, and still believes that there are issues with the game, then fair enough, you believe that, and that's down to you. But honestly, I've seen so many things in my time, and I look at it and I just think that's been poorly coded. The game's not dealing with my input correctly, but it's not like a deliberate attempt. And because if you think about it, you have this happen against you all the time, and I don't know, I just can't quite believe that, considering what I know about EA, considering how seriously they're taking the kind of competitive setup, that they would deliberately be implementing something which affects the outcome of matches in this way.
Yeah, no, I think those are all definitely very, very good points. The other thing I would ask, just to get your opinion on out of curiosity, is so what do you think about, like, getting scored on, not necessarily from kickoff, but like 45th, 90th minute goals? Is that purely mental? Is that a little bit of both? Is it like, so, I mean, because again, like, I understand real life, you know, stoppage time goals happen plenty of times for sure.
Yeah, so.
But it just seems like it happens a lot.
When I spoke to the gameplay producers, what they basically said was two things. One, that the 45th and 90th minute are longer than other minutes because of the way that the time shows, which is a bit of a, they should really show the time counting during that period to show how long it is. But the other thing is that they said quite clearly that their data doesn't show a particular increase in goals on those minutes, but it does.
I'm surprised.
But I think they were also suggesting that it is a time when in real football you do see goals scored because the pressure starts to tell or whatever, or one team switches off slightly. So I don't know. It's an interesting kind of point, and I kind of agree to an extent with what they were saying and could understand them, but at the same time, you do just see so many goals at those moments. It's kind of hard to believe. But then there's also that thing that you're kind of, you see it and you automatically think there's a 45th minute goal, there's a 90th minute goal. You don't think there's a 43rd minute goal and there's a 88th minute goal. So it's really hard to tell. Yeah. And I think also people who track their stats will tell you that they don't think there's a particular increase in 45th and 90th minute. So maybe it is one of those things that's, like, there's a huge thing in FIFA because there's such a massive community, and it's a great community. You know, love what you guys do, all the people out there who make content. But there is also this kind of, like, I don't know, it's a bubble, isn't there, that wants to build around things.
Oh, yes. So, very true. Very true. Yeah. Just to add into that a little bit more, just curious, too, what you might have found out about, you know, I think one thing in Weekend League that makes a huge difference. I don't know if it's necessarily home team versus away team, but it's like who's maybe closer to the FUT Champ server, or like who's quote-unquote hosting the game. I know they have dedicated servers for FUT Champs, but on a game-to-game basis, you know, one game could feel different than the next. And I, you know, I understand sometimes it's like maybe your custom tactics aren't working, like maybe the other team has a good formation, but why some games can, like, I don't know, Conte just run it up the pitch easy, and then the next game it feels like he's kind of like tracking in mud or something.
Honestly,
you know,
I had this weekend one of the worst weekends for variety in gameplay, and it's another thing I wanted to point out, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because delay is such a huge factor. You're absolutely right. And in the like, people are like, oh, I'm playing a totally different game now. I've had it when a delay has changed within a game, like coming after halftime, or even like during the middle of a passage of play, and suddenly it just feels that much more stiff. You can't take the touches you were taking before. And people just assume that this is something which is affecting both them and their opponent often, I think. And I've messaged players after I've had bad delay and said, you know, did you have delay in that game? And they've been quite honest and said, no, like, oh, that's a real shame you did, sort of thing. You know, they're obviously not just saying that. They're genuinely, that was what they felt, that they didn't have any. And, you know, I really, really did. And so you're almost guaranteed to lose in that situation. You're going to lose against the worst player. And it makes it even more impressive that your top players are able to get such good win rates, because they must have the ability to play through that and do that. I mean, do you have a bit of a problem yourself? I mean, you're from the East Coast. In London, we actually have quite a good server connection, so I actually generally have quite a good connection. But I think that actually makes it so much harder to play in games where it's delayed, because I'm so, you know, I'll get used to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, I just picture, all right, so we're close to New York City. I kind of picture, I'm just thinking of a map. I'm picturing from New York City to the top of Canada. Like, that's a gigantic stretch. Mm. Then I'm picturing from New York City to the bottom of South America. And I'm like, oh my God, am I playing people from, you know, far away all the time? Like, that couldn't bode well. Or even from like East Coast to like LA or something, you know, sometimes. And I try to call this on stream too, because, you know, sometimes I do get frustrated, but when something's just all going my way, I'm like, guys, like, are you guys watching this? It looks like I'm like 2 seconds ahead of what this guy's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
When I know I'm playing a player that should be pretty close to the same caliber. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of when you win games or lose games like that, that's why I go back to like the average to above average player. I just don't think that player is going to always be able to overcome when they're trying to change players and they can't change on defense, or like they try to do like a first time shot and it just goes too slow. Mm. I mean, that's where, you know, obviously if people can go 40-0, it is definitely possible.
Yeah.
But I just feel like having to overcome those things, sometimes I'll be like, dude, I just wish I could have played this guy on the same TV. Like, if we were sitting in my living room, would it be like the same result?
Yeah.
Like, you know, did I win because of my connection? Did he win because of his connection? And for esports and FUTchamps to take off, like, it's just, I feel like it's difficult to take that variable out of the equation. And that's just kind of,
that's just kind of part of it. It was actually discussed on the Foot Champions podcast, which I've been helping the guys, Richard and Brandon, with recently. They were talking about, with the two guys that are on this week, Colin and also Sean Dragon Allen, about connections and how that affects things, and also LAN events they've been talking about a lot as well. It's amazing how different people find it when they go to like a LAN event as opposed to playing at home on an online connection. And the other thing that they were talking about is the fact that there are so many Germans have qualified for the tournament, because obviously they are really close to the server, which is apparently in Frankfurt. So it does hold true.
That's interesting.
The proximity to the server is always going to have a bit of an impact on your ability and the delay and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There are very kind of specific things which I tend to see when I've got bad delay. I'm quite interested to know whether this is the same for you. When I have really bad delay and when I just feel like I'm going to lose this game, and it's probably one of those things that people suddenly think, oh, scripting or momentum or whatever, is when you pass to a player and they kind of look like they're going to trap it and then they don't, and then the ball goes past them. And that happens. That happened to me in like so many games last weekend. It's one of those things that you just, it just makes you kind of stop and think, oh, okay, this game is consigned to the bin now. If I can't make that pass, then that is it.
Yes, totally, dude. I have the same trouble. You know, I'm saying that on, like, I keep going back to what I say on stream the most. So one of the most frequent things I say while playing FIFA is I'll go, I didn't do that. And it's like, you know, a player doing a tackle, or like a player doing a slide, or some just like obnoxious touch that goes 50, you know, feet the other direction. So, I mean, I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's connection. I don't know if people say momentum, scripting, handicap. Like, kind of back to what I said earlier is just like, I think we all kind of have this different names for the same effect, whether it's like your connection or just whatever's going on, because kind of everybody, I feel like, unless you've only played like 10 games this year of FIFA, everybody's experienced that at least like one or two times, you know.
Yeah.
And of course there are people that will say just get good or get better, and yeah, totally, like if you put the time in, you could totally improve. But there's just definitely some things that just kind of makes you scratch your head. You know what I mean,
I would be really interested to see whether, if everyone's connection was like really good. And, you know, you have those games where you're like, this game is amazing. Like, the game feels beautiful. Like, it's running like it's so slick and smooth. If everyone played like that every weekend, would we get such a strong kind of feeling about these kind of aspects that we've been discussing? Or would that be, I think it would, I personally think it'd be hugely reduced. And I wonder whether EA should seriously consider putting, you know, their money where their mouth is and commit to putting more servers across the world, just because I think they'll just have a better time and the community is going to be more positive as a result. So many of these issues, I think, are down to the delay. And I think it's really unfortunate that for many people, this is going to continue. People in Italy and Spain, I think EA are aware, but people in Italy and Spain, there are hardly any pros at all qualified for that tournament. So I'm not really, I'm just thinking that they must be thinking about it. They've got to make changes.
Yeah, no, I agree. But yeah, I do think it comes down a lot of time to the servers. And again, like I said before, you know, we're all doing the FIFA point grind, the time grind, and like I said, you know, we all do give so much like free promotion as well to the game, which again, we all want the game to do well, we all want it to be fun, a good experience, but I don't think we're asking too much for the competitive game mode to be not delayed, you know what I mean? So that's kind of how I feel about that. I know it's like a tall order for them to make it a good connection for everyone, but yeah, like I just, if I'm going to be connected to someone, like I said, maybe at the top of Canada or like the bottom of South America, like what's the point of me playing that game if I'm going to win 6-0 because they can't move, or vice versa? Like if I'm going to lose by 5 goals because I can't change players.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've given it a good go. Obviously, these kind of things, podcasts like this should probably go out as sort of a special episode where it's all we talk about, and it takes weeks of sort of research and preparation. And this is just stuff that I kind of know off the top of my head, and you obviously do as well, and that we kind of come across. So there's bound to be things that, you know, people have ideas or thoughts which maybe we haven't discussed. Please do get in contact at footweeklypod or footweekly@mail.com if you're more into your emails and your tweets. And also, Drew, people might want to tweet you. I don't know whether you're interested in hearing their thoughts on scripting momentum and handicap, but where can they do that?
Yeah, please, it's at Dirty Spin Bros. So just Spin Bros with the word dirty before that, and obviously twitch.tv/spinbros. You're more than welcome to drop your opinion in the chat. I don't know if we'll always agree, but that is okay.
That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's been really interesting to have you on. It's been really interesting to get your thoughts, and thank you very much for doing so. We'd love to have you back in the near future.
Yeah, definitely, dude. I really enjoyed it, and I would like to I'd like to revisit even maybe just this subject. We could see kind of where it's at maybe like a few weeks from now, a month now. I'd be interested to see if they change anything.
Yeah, definitely. While you wait for the Foot Economist on the market and trading and those player reviews and the Team of the Week rundown, do take a moment to subscribe to the Foot Weekly podcast. Just search Foot Weekly in your podcast provider of choice, or go to footweeklypodcast.com/subscribe. So welcome back to part two. I hope you enjoyed that momentum scripting and handicap discussion. And it's not going to end quite there, because I think first thing I'll do is say hello to Foot Economist.
How you doing, Ben?
Very well, thank you. And ask you, what are your thoughts on that whole issue?
It's interesting. So I don't believe that scripting is, or handicap or momentum is in the game. I guess that's a short answer to it. But I think it's a rather interesting sort of conspiracy theory. And I think it has sort of its weight and its popularity, because I do think that, I mean, obviously FIFA is an incredibly frustrating game. It's a 1v1 environment. There isn't a whole lot to blame other than yourself. And I think this is a very good scapegoat for people to sort of deal with sort of failure and losing in a way that doesn't put the blame on themselves.
Yeah, that's interesting. Certainly most of our followers on Twitter seem to believe it exists, at 58% saying that they believe there is some momentum scripting or handicap in FIFA 18, and just 26% saying no. So let's move on to something else related to people determining the outcome of their games. That's what you could say. A huge thing that's blown up over the last day or so with the accusations of glitches and cheating. Foot Champions, I suppose, and people really using it to get into the top 100 even, actually.
It's been quite the sort of drama-filled past couple, 24 hours, I guess. Two players in particular have sort of been the focus of things, Uvi and Crassy. They're two YouTubers, pretty popular YouTubers, who do tutorials on, you know, basically gameplay mechanics that you can use and exploit to be better at FIFA. And they've been singled out for remarkably increasing their quote-unquote skill levels, and have been going on 40-0 runs after, like, I think barely managing Elite 2 and Elite 3 in the beginning of the season. So some rather peculiar and strange increases in skill, and I think there might be a reason why.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that this is to do with, and there's a few videos going around, to do with basically people playing on a mobile connection. Which is quite funny, because there's a video of Crassy, a tweet that he did before this blew up, where he was kind of saying, how ridiculous is this level of lag? Like, I can't believe this is happening. And even replied to his own tweet a bit later saying, still can't believe this, absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. And I actually played on a mobile connection when my house's internet went down at one point, and I was forced into kind of getting to the next monthly's reward tier. on very dodgy mobile internet. It was 4G, but you definitely get spikes like that where it looks exactly as he showed. I would not be surprised. The evidence is pretty damning, and they both have been covering up a lot of the kind of information, like things like gamer tags, their records, their, you know, all the kind of stuff which suggests sort of suspicious activity going on. I think Ovi released a statement which made things look even more suspicious, basically.
Right.
And without wanting to sound like drama alert, like, I mean, it does seem like a pretty sketchy situation, and I would have no surprise if they were both banned. Not to mention that they would be pretty good targets for EA, considering one, if not both, promote coin selling, so they're not going to be the most popular.
Right, and it's going to have interesting implications, because I believe, because of their records, they both qualified for the events for this past month, so you'd have to think that there'd be some pros out there that are going to get bumped into the spots.
Mm. And you've got to think there's surely more people than just this who've done this.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, market and trading stuff. That's what you're here for, of course. Let's talk about Black Friday first of all. I know we covered post Black Friday last week, but things have been kind of interesting over the last week. We've had some strange movement, I suppose, on the likes of Nyangalan and Vidal, Pogba as well, and Hazard. All four of those have had some, drops in price, which people really weren't expecting.
Yeah, I mean, a really popular investment during Black Friday, and really always is a popular investment during Team of the Week SBCs, is to invest in the actual Team of the Week that came out while the SBCs were active. And the reason behind it is because usually the prices of those Team of the Week items drops very low. A lot of people are undercutting because they're constantly packing the Team of the Week items. And interestingly enough, they've actually, as you said, taken a dip down from their prices that you could get them at during the Team of the Week 10. And that's surprising. I can't remember the last time that's happened where items from the Team of the Week SBC dropped down. And I think there might be two reasons sort of factoring into it. I don't know which one is the most contributing one, but the two reasons are, the first is that I think what happened is this trade sort of went viral. The investment in Nainggolan, Pogba, and Vidal sort of went viral. It's very popular among some of the bigger influencers in the community. And it's not necessarily a fault of some of those guys who were promoting it. In fact, it isn't a fault of those guys who are promoting it. It's just that a lot of new players come in on Black Friday who are new to trading, new to investing, and they essentially put a lot of their coins into this investment that it sounded like and probably was the highest conviction trade that a lot of these guys had, and they ended up going all in. And then sort of what happens with new traders and investors, they don't understand that you have to hold a card for a relatively extended period of time, maybe 2 or 3 weeks at least. And I think what we saw is a couple people starting to sell it on before the investment had matured really at all. And that led to a little bit of a dip in price. And then that little bit of a dip in price led to some of the less experienced investors getting panicking a little bit. And then it sort of down spiraled from there. So interestingly enough, I mean, we're going to talk about it in a bit, but I think there's actually a period or gap right now where you can get in and buy in sort of this window that it is sort of downtrodden and being pushed down by all this panic selling before it rebounds back up. But before you sort of do that, my second reason I think it might be a little bit lower is because this year we have more access to icons through the SBCs.
And more competitive icons as well, I think.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there's people talk about the icon effect all the time, how icons make a huge difference in gameplay. And it's what a lot of people are basing their teams around, especially in the middle of the park. So, there's a number of reasons why I think it might be a little bit lower, and maybe players like that, it's just a mispriced, or it's a correction in the actual overall value of those players rather than a panic sell. There's an argument for that as well.
Yeah, and in terms of other investments, in terms of other changes we've had over the past week, we had Screams boosted, which was pretty interesting. We called it, I think, on Twitter back in, I guess it was early November, saying that on the 3rd of December we'd have a supermoon, so it's quite likely that those Screams got boosted again. And I think we did see a rise, and anyone who picked those Scream cards up fairly early, I think they'll have made quite a decent profit out of that, actually.
Yeah, it was actually, I mean, like you said, you called it on the Super Moon. Yeah. You don't have to say you might call it. You definitely called it. And people made quite a few coins on them. We saw that in the 24 hours of the actual boost itself, there was actually some pretty interesting price movements I do want to break down. If the Scream card was 85 and below when it was finally boosted, it didn't actually raise up that much in price, only about 3%. Mm-hmm. And I think that was because they weren't exactly that valuable for the Icon SBCs. And I think that was what the main investment thesis was behind a lot of these cards. I mean, if you look at them, yeah, they're okay for competitive FIFA, but they're not worth going out of your way and buying them just to put them in your weekly league squad. So the main value behind these cards was turning around and putting them in the Icon SBCs. And I think that's why we saw the biggest boost for the 86 and 87 rated cards. That actually went up about 10%. On that 24-hour period. And then as you sort of go to the 88s and 89s, they went up a little bit less, just around 4%. And then the 90s and above, I think we're going up just about 3%. Maybe some of those were being used and rose a little bit for their actual competitive nature. But that's something to keep in mind as we go forward. I think there's going to be other opportunities throughout the year where, you know, there's going to be full moons or, I don't know, special moons that...
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting. Like, I don't think there are many more special moons coming up. Mm. And there's obviously a full moon every month. Is it possible that they'll do it that regularly? And surely that they'll all get wiped off the market, wouldn't they? I mean, there's only so many, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think that if they were going to keep boosting them, that they would have to put them back in packs at some point, to run some sort of off promotion or something like that, just to put them back in packs, or maybe some sort of SBC that guarantees them. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, what could they? Maybe Lunar New Year, considering that was much later. When was Lunar New Year?
Yeah, I think it's on the 16th of February.
Okay, so they could actually put them back in packs at that point.
Yeah, I suppose so.
That would kind of make sense, yeah. Also, we've got on the horizon, which may have an effect on the market, the team of the group stage, which is coming up, it's this Friday, of course.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the actual team of the group stage itself is looking pretty solid. You've got a couple players in there who have Path to Glory cards and One to Watch cards. Potential players, obviously not already in it.
I mean, you can see the likes of El Shaar, Davinson Sanchez, of course. Mm-hmm. Neymar would be a huge one. Mm-hmm. Salah, although there's a question mark because of his player of the month. Ederson, Giuliano, Mbappe.
Right.
So all of those cards are live items.
Right.
So quite interesting. So if you see any of those looking underpriced, then they could be a potential option to collect, although I'm sure that people have clocked onto those by now, to be honest.
Right.
But a big one, of course, is that Ronaldo.
Mm.
That could be a striker card as well.
Right, yeah. And the interesting thing about him, is, one, that'll be something that people open up packs for. I mean, a striker Ronaldo, that'll catalyze people to open up packs. And his regular card, I would suspect, has potential to go up a little bit. Because, I mean, with someone like Ronaldo, whose supply is so small, just being out of packs for a week is something that could push up his price. Because I suspect that his sort of like equilibrium is very, very volatile.
Actually, we had a question in from Scotty who asked, what do you think the price is going to be of that striker on PS4? He was asking, actually, what kind of price are we looking at? I mean, I guess it's anyone's guess, but a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be expensive. That's the most solid answer I can give you, but if I had to...
There we have it, market expert for comments. 40,000 followers on Twitter.
If you're pinching my arm and you're telling me I have to guess, I'd probably say above 4 million for sure, could get creeping up to 5 million.
Yeah. I mean, that is huge. It's weird to think that people have that kind of coinage at this stage in the game.
Yeah, it is quite wild.
And then in terms of that team of the group stage, of course, we could also see that big SBC, which can have a bit of an effect on the market, couldn't we? That it's essentially a team of the week SBC, but for team of the group stage players.
Yeah, no, that's definitely an interesting one that you got to keep in mind, especially, I mean, looking at some of the movements from the index that I've been tracking over the past couple of days, like the likes of the cheap 83s and the cheap 81s and 82s, because of the nature of the requirements for a potential SBC like that, where you could obviously, as you said, guarantee a team of the group stage card, tradable or untradable, if you turn in a relatively high-rated gold team. The likes of the 83s could jump back up to similar prices that we saw over Black Friday, where they were going for 3,400 something coins. They're all the way back down. They've dropped 50% down to 1,600. So
that's potentially a good investment, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, right now, if you ask me, again, if you pinch my arm and said, right now, what is the sort of the best investment, the most surefire investment? While it's not the most glorious, it's a little bit time consuming, I would say pick up cheap 83s and hope and pray that they do a Team of the Group Stage SBC. And one thing to keep in mind for that Team of the Group Stage SBC is sometimes they don't drop it right away when the Team of the Group Stage comes out. They'll wait a day or two. And that's just, you know, something to be aware of, because one thing that you could do is when they do drop the Team of the Group Stage, sometimes the lower end Team of the Group Stage players actually drop down to relatively cheap prices, and you can get in and pick them up, because usually, I mean, every time they've had a Team of the Group Stage SBC, there was a requirement for a Team of the Group Stage player to, you have to turn it in, and then you get, you know, you have to turn in two, you get one back for the untradeable or the tradable one. So that's just something to keep in mind. It could see those price, that could be like a short term flip opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. So you buy them when they're not required for an SBC, right, and then suddenly the SBC comes out, and then you can chuck those players into it, basically.
Right.
Or not chuck them into the SBC. Well, you might want to do that, but you probably chuck them off the market. So that's obviously one thing I suppose people can be doing to make coins. They can go for the 83s, 84s, maybe 82s for that SBC, and they can also maybe look to flip some of those Team of the Group Stage players. Is there anything else that you've got up your sleeve for our adoring public to check out?
There's a couple of things that you can be checking out if you're looking to make some coins here in the short term. We have cheap 85s and cheap 86s, which you can take a look at for the Icon SBCs and the Footmas promotions that are coming up. The Icon SBC, the next one we'll have is on the 14th, and then right after that we'll have Footmas potentially starting on the 15th. And for both of those, you'll need relatively high-rated squads. Right now, it's kind of awkward because the cheap 85s and 86s are just a little bit expensive. They've actually recovered quite a bit, about 20% from their Black Friday dip. What they were on Black Friday, it wasn't necessarily a dip, but so you're going to be buying a little bit of a premium. I think there's a couple windows that you might be able to get in on those cards that could make them a little bit cheaper. Potentially this Thursday, when we have the release of Weekend League Rewards, you could see people, like, immediately when they pack their, you know, their plays that they get in their packs, they could list them up. That's obviously a good time to get in there if you have quick fingers, try and snipe some cards. Or you could wait until this weekend when they do Team of the Group Stage. Obviously, people are going to be opening up a lot of packs trying to get that Team of the Group Stage Ronaldo, so that could be a time where you could see a dip in the price of those cards. But you have to remember, it's sort of a slippery slope, because as soon as we get off of the, you know, that weekend where there's the Team of the Group Stage and packs, people are going to start turning their attention towards the Icon SBCs, like that's the next big event, and usually people will shift a lot of their coins into that. So you got to make sure you get in relatively early into something like that. Finally, the third one I have for you, there's the cheap 83s, the cheap 85s and 86s, is a cheap 83 and 84 and possibly 85 rated informs. They are a very popular requirement. If you look back to the Footmas SBC requirements, every single player SBC had some sort of Team of the Week requirement. And you know, the likes of these 83s and 84s, especially, I mean, you're not going to be getting at the cheapest price, but even heading back to Team of the Week 10, some of those guys are still relatively cheap compared to what I think they could rise to if we have some heavy hitting player SBCs. So, you know, some good looks there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's really interesting stuff as always. And I think the very last thing, the Foot Champs cheat gate that we've seen over the last day, it's possible, yeah, I've done it before, that they cancel the Weekend League. I think a few market influencers have been suggesting that possibly it could cause a significant crash without that demand there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a really big panic last year when that happened. I'm not sure it's going to be as big of a panic this year, because I think people know Weekend League is coming back. But I suppose if you are looking for a window to buy some of those investments that I just talked about, maybe even the cheap icons, the high-rated golds, that could be a good window.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Let's move on to the Team of the Week then. And actually, just to start off, there's a few players I want to point out from a market perspective. Actually, we've got De Vrij from Lazio, an 85 rated inform. Jonas, he's also an 85 rated inform. And then we've finally got Ever Banega, who's also an 85 rated inform, which is actually quite rare to see so many 85 rated kind of cheap informs in one Team of the Week. Could they represent an investment, or do you think 84s just offer better value?
Yeah, it's interesting. I do think 84s are probably a better value, just looking at some of their prices now, comparing them to sort of like the value that you get in the overall of your squad. Unless they do some sort of SBC, I mean, one thing to keep in mind for the Footmas SBCs is they generally require pretty high chemistry. So the likes of Jonas and Benega, I'm sort of looking at as might be a little bit more attractive than some of the, you know, some of the other ones like De Vrij. Just because of their nations and their leagues are sort of, well, not necessarily for the league for Jonas, but the nation for Jonas, is relatively good for chemistry reasons. And if they were to drop a player SBC for a competitive high level player in, you know, for example, Liga Santander, someone like Benega could be useful.
Yeah, that's a good point. So elsewhere in the team of the week, you've obviously got some, I guess, a couple of really more marquee players, but it's not an outstanding team of the week. And Griezmann's one of those weird players. When I look at his card stats, I don't get particularly excited, but he's a very good player in game. 87 pace, 87 shooting, 88 dribbling, with 80 passing and 70 physical. It's not really shouting 740k to me, but he is quite good. Sterling, as well as the other big player, obviously is a second in form, and his card looks really, really good. 95 pace, 87 dribbling, and then 79 shooting and 82 passing. He's a nightmare to play against. Something about his kind of custom running style makes him really hard to sort of predict his movement, I think. And then Verratti's the other kind of big name player, although more valuable than him is that 86 Casemiro. He looks pretty good, and if you can look beyond his pace, I'm sure he'd be a pretty tidy prospect, although I do find that not so many people are using him this year. He was quite popular last year, but haven't really seen him so much. Another interesting player I wanted to mention, more for the fact that his had a nation change, is Marlos. He's in this team as a Ukrainian, and of course famous for being a Brazilian five-star skiller, silver, back in the day, and he's a Brazilian regular card, so when he goes back into packs, it's possible that he's actually going to be Ukrainian, which means that the Brazil cards of Marlos is completely out of packs, which has seen him already rise to, I think, about 6k. I picked up a couple of him when I was chatting with Dan for TraderX, and we kind of made a few coins on him, but one of those things you always wish you'd pick up more of these players, don't you?
Yeah.
When you make a call like that. But the other player, two players actually that I wanted to shout out, is Sirigu, who I've been using across the week and was actually quite impressed with. His 82 in form isn't too much to sort of write home about, but this 84 is actually a really solid keeper, and he comes out and makes some pretty good stops 1v1, and Lang is great if you want to link him up to El Yunusi's in form. I have the El Yunusi's monthly, so I just felt like I might as well try and get him on full chem. Lang with Shadow, honestly, like he's a really solid right back. I wouldn't look past him if you're looking for a I guess chemistry bitch to bring up the old foothead lingo, but he's a very, very solid player. And then finally, I think we're going to compare two left backs who we quite like the look of this week, and see who, I mean, it's not actually the first time we've done a left back face off, but it's that time again. And in fact, these are both left wing backs. So the player you've got is a Dutch in the Premier League. It's Ziegler.
Ziegler, yeah. So he looks pretty good. One sort of sore spot of the Premier League is their left back situation. I mean, there's Rose, who I think has become sort of the popular option for those that are doing a pure play Premier League squad. But Ziegler, he looks like an interesting option. I mean, just looking through some of his stats, he's got pretty good sprint speed, so he's going to be quick, but his acceleration is 79, so not great, but maybe you can boost that up with a shadow or something like that, or some other chemistry style that boosts his pace. The one sore spot for me is his agility. It's 75. That's not great for a left back. Usually you're looking for at least 80s, I would suppose, in left backs. He does have some other things going for him. He's quite tall, 6'1", and he's got, you know, decent work rates on him, with medium high, which is not atypical for left backs, but it's not, you know, anything that to write home about. He does have pretty good stamina, so at 87, so he's going to be able to get up and back, and he has great strength. So he's a big body, and I would suppose that he'd be pretty good at the box defending your sort of far post crosses, but defending some of the quicker wingers. You know, for example, you just talked about Sterling. He's a bit difficult to predict because of his running style. Someone like that could cause Ziegler some problems.
Yeah. Definitely. So my man is Rousselot, who's Montpellier's right left back. He's one of those players that is kind of strange in that his 76 rated left back card was probably the best French left back in the game somehow. So the fact that he's got this inform is pretty significant. This kind of, I guess, quick and agile and strong left back. It's just a really nice combination. So in terms of his acceleration and sprint speed, he's got 99 acceleration and 98 sprint speed with Shadow, and then he's got 93 interceptions, 91 marking, 95 stand tackle, and 96 sliding tackle. So just stunning pace and defending. And then physicality wise, I think he's actually fairly solid without a boost. 79 strength, which could go up to sort of 85 if you used 89 if you used anchor, and then 78 aggression, 76 jumping, and 84 stamina. And actually, I'd say that might be the only downside of this card. 84 stamina, I'd like a little bit more actually on my left back, especially if you want them to bomb forward. 83 agility, 82 balance, 79 reactions, 82 ball control, 83 dribbling, 79 composure as well. So that's all really, really good. No problems with that. And 83 short passing, 77 long passing as well. So I think he's a very, very well-rounded left back. And I think he's not going to be out of place in the weekend league team, even at 81 rated. Be interesting to see whether he gets any more informed, because they could really, really be top, top tier left backs.
Right.
But pretty interested to see what he's like. And I think you could quite easily slip him into a lot of teams because of the fact he's French. And as Ligue 1 grows in popularity, could well be a better shout as time goes on, basically.
Yeah, I think you've definitely won the left back off. I'm much more convinced at your description.
It's just the way I've spun it. And the fact that I've got 40. No.
After that admission, I'm eager to hear about your review for today, which I think you're going to be looking at 89 Ronaldinho.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to letting our listeners know. I mean, he's obviously an expensive card. I joked about Ronaldo's Team of the Group Stage card not being too relevant to our listeners, but this Ronaldinho is quite expensive as well. You're looking at about 2 million on Xbox and PlayStation. The one thing I'd say is that if you don't love Ronaldinho, if you don't love skills, just probably just like end the podcast now, because it's just not worth the 1.92 million. If you want to enjoy the game, have fun, use a bit of skill, and if you enjoy a long shot, I'd stick around and listen to what I'm about to say, because Ronaldinho is without a doubt the best long shot taker I've used probably for years. I can't actually remember scoring more long shots with a player, and I'm not even quite sure why, because I've been using him on basic, so shot power is 88 and his long shots are only 86. So I don't know. I imagine it's probably something to do with his traits and his balance, maybe, and his sort of ability to kind of set himself up. He doesn't even have long shot taker though, so I'm still struggling as to why. It might be that kind of icon OP thing that people like to talk about, but he does also kind of maneuver himself into really good positions to take them, so it's possible that's something to do with it. But what I found quite interesting is when I first got him, I had him on Hunter, and honestly, he felt really bad on the ball. Like, I'm not even sure how that's possible. I think it was because his agility at 85 wasn't particularly outstanding. If you think about many of your top players in foot, even lower rated, will have better agility than that. I've been using Crespo with Engine, and his agility was very good. I think it was in the 90s. So I think that drop down to sort of using someone at 85 agility was a bit of a, bit of a culture shock in a way. So what I did was slap basic on him and put him back to cam. For some reason, I was playing him at striker, and he was a bit of a revelation at that point, because you get 87 strength on him as well, which is really nice. 90 agility and then 97 ball control and 93 dribbling. He's also got 93 composure and finesse shot traits, so as well as 90 finishing, so he can finish really effectively. The only thing I'd say is that he doesn't feel like 87 strength. I think that's to do with his aggression and also stamina, which both have an effect on strength, so I'd probably watch out for that. His passing is pretty immaculate, like I've had absolutely no problems with that. And one thing I've found is that the amount of free kicks I've been scoring, or free kick opportunities I've taken, has increased dramatically. Everyone thinks that you're going to shoot with Ronaldinho from a free kick situation, so I always like adjust his run up a little bit to make it look like I'm definitely going to shoot with him, and then quickly bring that second man in. We talked about this another week. Bring that second man in and do the little run. Obviously he's got great passing, so he normally finds the player. So I found that pretty effective. I've been playing him in a 4-1-2-1-2-2, the classic meta abusing formation, right. And I've had him in cam, and I think that is definitely his best position. I might look to upgrade to the 91, and I'll may well play that in strike, just because of the increase in pace, and I really like having a striker with 5-star skills who can kind of drift out wide and beat a player. So potentially that's an option, but I've been enjoying Mertens so much of late, it feels like a waste to have Ronaldinho there instead of Mertens. So yeah, a little trident up front of Ronaldinho, Mertens and Gabriel Jesus, which is, yeah, it's pretty meta, but Ronaldinho, I think, makes up for that a little bit. I've just been really impressed. He plays like Ronaldinho at this point in his life, and the great thing about him is the way that they've kind of customized the animations, so it really does feel like you're kind of using Ronaldinho rather than just any other player. He's really fun.
Well, that all sounds really good. In fact, I'm half convinced to try and get him right now, but I do have two questions for you before I personally would make a buying decision. And the first is, and maybe this might be a difficult question, but is there a player that you can compare him to from sort of the rest of the players in FUT that sort of play similar to him?
It's kind of hard to say because I guess he's just so unique, which makes him really exciting to use. But if you imagine, I don't know whether many people have used him, but Rui Costa, if you've used him, he's basically like a much better version with 5-star skills, I guess, and better finishing, which is crucial because Rui Costa's finishing, I think, often lets people down. At least it's let people down against me. So that's probably the closest comparison. But then in terms of like a really cheap player, I guess because of his size, bit of strength, it'd be like a really much, much better version, and with 4-star weak foot of Yarmolenko, yeah, would probably be a rough comparison.
And then my second question is his stamina a problem?
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because that was my reason for playing him at striker first, was because of that stamina and thinking that it might be a problem. But actually, even at CAM, and even though annoyingly in the 4-1-2-1-2-2, the centre mids sometimes swap with the CAM, he still doesn't have a huge problem and seems to be able to go the whole game. Bear in mind, he's got medium attacking, low defensive. And I also put him on conservative interceptions, which means that you get less stamina drain. You'll find if you put it on aggressive, they drain really quickly. So yeah, that's something that I've kind of done to negate that problem. But it seems fine. He seems okay.
Well, that was quite the endorsement. I suppose anyone out there who's listening, who is especially in favor or is a skiller, would enjoy him.
Yeah, without a doubt. He's a really, really enjoyable player, as you can probably hear. So I think the last thing to do is just wrap things up with maybe a mention for your streaming, which you've been doing.
Mm. Yeah, so I, as you said, I've been doing some streams, or one stream thus far, but I'm planning on doing more over on Twitch. My username over on Twitch is Foot Economist. I'm sure you could just find it by searching Foot Economist Twitch on Google, but I think the actual link itself would be like twitch.com/ Foot Economist. And this time there is no underscore. I actually got the, you know, I was the first one over on Twitch to claim the Foot Economist namesake, so it's all mine.
So that Russian guy off Twitter didn't pinch it before?
No, he didn't. He didn't make a Twitch account in 2011 when he made his Twitter.
Right, well, that just about wraps it up. Enjoy that team in the group stage and the weekend league if it happens. And of course, don't forget to subscribe, and we look forward to seeing you very soon.
Bye.